Residents west of Lolo are warned of the risks of mudslides and flash flooding. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katrin Fry tells us about a new levy request by the Kalispell School District. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with two experts about preventing child abuse. Officials with the Missoula Rural Fire District and Sheriff's Office and other emergency workers today visited with residents affected by last summer's Lolo Complex fires to warn them of the potential danger of mud and debris slides and flooding this spring. Sheriff spokeswoman Paige Pavallone says about 10 residents west of Lolo are at risk after severe fire damaged the hillsides near their homes.
Potential that there's a severe thunderstorm or a major weather system. If they see a quarter of an inch to one-third of an inch fall within a half an hour's time, then that is the conditions that are going to put into place debris slides. And that's where you're going to see all that runoff of rock, mud, burnt tree debris, and things like that.
There is no immediate danger, and the potential for a mudslide or flash flood depends on how the weather unfolds this spring. But residents are advised to be ready to leave quickly.
Be prepared to pack up and leave, essentially. And if the sheriff's office has time, and if emergency responders have time, they're going to notify residents that they have to evacuate. And that's going to be done by placing a red notification on the door. We're going to try to make personal contact with them. But again, that's if we're given the luxury of time to do that. They can happen really quickly. That's why they're called flash floods. So we just ask people to think about the possibility, have a safety plan in place.
Residents are also urged to sign up for Smart 911 so they can get alerts quickly and to aid emergency workers in the event of an evacuation.
And in other news from around the state, a 22-year-old Missoula man has died after a motorcycle crash near Lolo. The Montana Highway Patrol says the man was speeding northbound when he entered a right-hand curve on U.S. Highway 93 shortly after 11 last night. The motorcycle crossed the yellow line, went into the median, and struck a concrete barrier and a steel sign support on top of the barrier. The force of the impact broke the support, and the driver came to rest on top of the barrier. The patrol says he died at the scene of blunt force trauma. He was wearing a helmet. The victim's name is being withheld until family members can be notified.
The Kalispell School District has had a tough time passing bond and levy requests over the past several years. This month, it's sending a levy request back before voters, but it's approaching the request a little differently. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on how the school is using a long-term outlook and engaging the public before putting the issue to vote.
Kalispell School District 5 is asking voters for a 10-year technology levy for both the high school and elementary school districts. Each request is $600,000, $1.2 million total per year, over the 10-year period. A 2010 building reserve and technology levy failed to pass for the high school district. It passed for the elementary schools. Kalispell tried again, and failed, in 2012. Information Technology Director for District 5, Richard Lawrence, says this is the first time the district is trying to pass a technology-only levy.
We have students sitting in front of PCs that are 7 to 10 years old at both high schools, and not just a few, hundreds of them.
Lawrence says operating systems are also out of date.
Not only statewide, but nationwide. In the last 7 years, there's been a 40% increase in curriculum that's delivered through technology means. And since it's been in the last 7 years, a lot of this older equipment, because of the new browsers and that type of thing that's needed to deliver this type of curriculum, we're struggling with older equipment.
Today there are 10 applications due. If you've done 100 hours of volunteer service, the Governor's Youth Scholarship, and well, there's just way too many to tell you about. You can read, right?
Daily announcements at Flathead High School are multimedia, beamed into each classroom via television or projector onto smartboard. Library media specialist Murray Graham leads the class that produces them.
They have 50 minutes, one class period to get it done, and I tell them it's the start of the semester. This is like a job. You have this; it has to be accomplished by the end of your work day, which is just the period, second period. And so far, the kids have really done a great job.
Graham says the class has 11 students taking turns at different jobs, including editing, gathering and entering information about lunch, sports, weather, activities. anchors for the announcements, as well as taking pictures and movies of what's going on around the school.
There's a lead in.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You always put a little music in it.
The students use Adobe Pro to edit the video. The on-screen anchors read off a teleprompter run by another student, and each day the next day's announcements have to get put together.
It's a hard deadline, and they don't get fired from the job, they just get a bad grade.
The students work in one of the three library computer labs. Graham says he also averages about 65 classes each week, booking time to come in and use the computers. Flathead and Glacier High School have been operating without a technology levy since 2010. Graham says he's been working within his own budget, buying a few computers per year from the funds he would otherwise use to purchase new media and materials.
It's a toss-up. You do what you can to make it work. That's one of the things about teachers. You'll find out we're the great enablers. You got to make it happen because the kids are what count. So you make it work.
Last year, Kalispell Schools built new classrooms to address overcrowding at the elementary level after voters approved a building reserve levy. Outreach coordinator Mike Crawford for the school district says this technology levy follows a similar style of making a very specific request of voters.
Technology is advancing and changing so rapidly, you have to have a long-term plan in place to keep cutting edge and relevant. And I think that's the difference. You know, there's a big difference between doing, let's say, some site repairs and planning to have a relevant education for a student next year plus 10 years in the future.
Being able to ask for a 10-year levy is also new. It came out of the 2012 legislative session. Crawford says he's been presenting to parents and business leaders and generally hearing support for the need for up-to-date technology in the schools to supply students with better tools to better compete in the job market. Opening these lines of communication is part of the district's approach. Wednesday evening, it's hosting a community forum where attendees will hear from teachers about how technology is being used at school, everywhere from yearbook to the auto shop, as well as breaking down what the 10-year tech plan looks like.
But of course, I don't think, you know, anybody likes taxes. It's just how well I think you can explain why this is a need that's not just a want. We really believe that this is going to be vital to our students to have best chance at success economically in the current climate.
Ballots get sent out April 21st, due back by May 6th. If passed, a Kalispell resident with a house assessed at a value of $200,000 would pay about $42 per year, or $350 per month. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Last year, over 300 Montanans died from misuse of prescription drugs. According to a state health survey of young people, over 10% of Missoula 8th, 10th, and 12th graders have used a prescription narcotic that was not prescribed to them. Those facts are why Missoula is sponsoring a week of drug prevention events this week. The events include a summit tomorrow featuring State Attorney General Tim Fox and keynote speaker Andy Duran. Duran is with a Chicago-based group called LEAD, or Linking Efforts Against Drugs. Duran says among teenagers 12 to 17, four of the five drugs of choice, besides alcohol, are prescription drugs.
You know, when we think of drug abuse, we think of cocaine, heroin, the things that we know are really harmful. With prescriptions, a lot of those things are very similar to those what we consider to be riskier drugs. There's so much access to these from in people's homes, in their homes of their grandparents, and they're really easy to get, and they have a significant impact.
The Summit on Prescription Drug Abuse Prevention takes place tomorrow from 9 until 2 at the Hilton Garden Inn in Missoula. There will also be a community conversation featuring a panel of experts tomorrow evening from 7 until 8:30 at the City Life Community Center. We'll have a feature interview with Andy Duran later this week on Montana Evening Edition.
April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, an unfortunate reminder that child abuse, in all its forms, continues to be a persistent problem. Missoula's Teresa Nygaard and Katie Peterson are all too familiar with the issue. Nygaard is executive director of The Parenting Place, a local program that provides a variety of services, chief among them strengthening families by providing classes to build parenting skills. Peterson is a city police detective who specializes in investigating sexual crimes committed against children. Peterson also volunteers at the Parenting Place Board of Directors. In this evening's feature interview with Edward O'Brien, Nygaard and Peterson discuss the causes of child abuse, its prevalence, and what can be done to reduce these crimes. Nygaard says abuse falls into three general categories: physical violence, sexual, and psychological.
That would be where neglect would fall in, and emotional abuse, where parents are humiliating, belittling, you know, doing something that makes a child feel less than who they are, damages their self-esteem or their self-worth.
Doesn't every parent from the beginning of time, haven't they done that before, belittled, shamed?
What we're talking about in a lot of ways is more than those few rare times when you do it accidentally or you do it because you don't have anything else to say. But when you do that the majority of times and you don't have the positive praise or the encouragement as the bulk of what you do, how you respond to a child, that's where you get the emotional abuse.
Is a little bit of shame a good thing? And I know that's a creepy thing to ask, but is it good maybe to take a kid off the pedestal a little bit?
Our kids need to know all of our emotions, everything that we can feel, and shame is one of those things. And so I think a healthy way that we can instill all of those feelings in a child, but I think only to a point where they understand what that is and that they're ashamed of how they treated their brother or sister, something like that, but not to a point where it's really damaging to their self-esteem or their self-worth.
Do you agree, Detective?
Yeah, I do. And I do have to give full disclosure here. Teresa's given me some parenting tips over the years. Mm-hmm. And to highlight one of the points she just made, I can think of several instances where I had a knee-jerk reaction to my child and I wasn't proud of the way that I treated her. And so I go back and say, the way I reacted was inappropriate. And yes, I use that word with her. And tell her, no matter what happens, I still love her even when I'm upset at her. And if I knock her off her pedestal, I make sure that she knows that sometimes I'm wrong and do what I can to let her know that no matter what she does, I still love her.
And you're pretty confident that message sinks in.
I'll let you know in about 15 more years.
Is spanking, Ms. Nygaard, is that child abuse?
I mean, the simple answer is no, it's not child abuse. And I think that's where we always get into the power struggle. What I will say about spanking is there's a lot of other forms of discipline that we can use. And I think where it becomes abusive is when that's the only thing you use. And of course, the technicalities of leaving marks become child abuse to the law. At the Parenting Place, our philosophy is we don't believe that corporal punishment is the best form of discipline. And so our curriculum for 30 years has been based on nurturing, not on spanking. So we use nurturing parenting techniques to help parents gather enough information to be able to have other strategies. We call it in their toolbox. So if you have one tool that you use and you're going to build a house, if you only have one tool, how successful are you going to be building that house? Probably not very successful. So what we want to do is we want to load up that toolbox with a lot of tools for them to use. That way, any given circumstance, any age, they've got something to pull out. And it probably won't be spanking as the first choice.
I'm curious. We do broadcast to a big chunk of Montana. Your specialty, obviously, Detective, is Missoula. Mm-hmm. What do you and your colleagues see in this town? How pervasive is child abuse in whatever form it may take?
Well, I would say that we don't even see all of it. Child Protective Services is going to see much more than we do. And they often see the case much sooner than we do. And if during their investigation they believe that a criminal line has been crossed, that's when we get the case. So I do believe that question would be better answered by somebody through Child Protective Services. I will tell you that CPS is incredibly busy, as am I.
Well, what we notice at the Parenting Place is that we've got families walking through the door all the time, whether they're referred by another organization in our community, whether they're mandated by the court system or Department of Family Services, or whether they've heard it from a family member and they've decided to walk through the door on their own. What we see are a lot of families who are struggling, financial struggles, housing struggles, mental health issues, drugs and alcohol, domestic violence. I mean, there's a range of things. And one of the things we're really looking at this point in time is something called adverse childhood experiences. Probably the majority of families that we see are parents who have had a multitude of adverse childhood experiences in the first 18 years of their life. What that means is they've either been abused or neglected in some fashion. They have had family dysfunction, which includes mental health issues, domestic violence. A parent or a family member has been incarcerated. And once you get to a certain number of those, four or more is going to mean that you actually perpetuate some dysfunction in your life because you're trying to cope with all of that trauma you endured as a child.
These adverse childhood experiences, what sort of toll, if there is one, does it exert on our society long term?
It's tremendous. What we see with parents who had adverse childhood experiences, a multitude of them in their first 18 years, are people who don't cope very well, people who are trying to self-medicate, drugs, alcohol, addictions, people who have mental health issues, are mentally ill, need medications, people who then perpetuate a cycle of violence with their family or others. It's just pervasive. When we look back and we see all this damage, then we can look forward and see all the damage it's going to create.
Detective, how effectively does law enforcement handle child abuse? And when I say law enforcement, I'm talking about everyone from the cop on the beat to the county attorneys to judges.
I think here in Missoula, and I can only speak as far as Missoula goes, I think that we do a pretty good job. And it's not necessarily because it's just our response. But we've got places like the Parenting Place that we can refer these families to. There's other nonprofits in Missoula that can help surround families as well. And I feel like we do a pretty good job in Missoula of knowing who these nonprofits are and knowing that whether we respond to a call where a parent is making a report of child sexual abuse, maybe a trusted person has offended on the child, or whether it's the prosecutor who's handling the case at the end, both the prosecutor and then also the initial responding officer can either refer the family to Parenting Place or refer the suspect for treatment and resources here in Missoula. So I feel like we do a good job because we've got so many fantastic resources in Missoula.
But what if you're in Libby or Broadus or Dillon, someplace where maybe they don't have the wealth of those resources? Ms. Nygaard.
You have to have the ability to either transport people or for people to have the transportation to get themselves to resources. Otherwise, they just don't get them.
When we talk about child abuse prevention, what does that mean? Let's say you're a 19, 20-year-old father. Mm-hmm. Your wife or your girlfriend is out at work and you have the baby and the baby is screaming and is in a fit. And we read these stories about these people, they go off on the child and it's a homicide eventually.
Right, right.
What do you do in those sorts of circumstances?
Well, in those sorts of circumstances, when you're talking about a father who is just ready to lose it at that moment, it may be too late. But what we want to do instead is we want to get the word out that parenting classes, parent education is all normal. None of us are given a handbook when we bring our child home from the hospital. And so we want to normalize parent education so that everybody comes to the table to get a little bit more information. And so when we do our classes or we do our home visiting program, we're offering that. We offer something called the period of purple crying. It covers exactly what you're talking about. The normal stage of crying that happens, they used to call it colic. And so everybody had a colicky baby. Now it's called the period of purple crying, and it lasts from about 2 weeks, could potentially last up to 5 months. That is normal. And we need to make a plan for when that happens, when baby is crying so much and so often that we feel ourselves losing control. We have a plan in place for that. So young dad, if he came to our classes and he learned about period of purple crying, he would have a plan in place so that he would say, okay, this is what they were talking about. I need to go set the baby down in the crib. I need to walk out on the front porch and just take a deep breath. Or I need to call my mom because she's the one who could come over and help me with the baby. It's okay to reach out for help. Sometimes we all need it.
And Detective, what if you're a young woman, you have a toddler, an infant, and you just started dating a guy? Is it wise to leave your baby with that man?
Well, every situation is going to be different. True. My knee-jerk reaction would be to say no. How well do you know this person? Do they possess any parenting skills? Do they have kids of their own? Are they in a relationship with you with ulterior motives, maybe an interest in your child, which I will tell you is rare, but it is certainly something a protective parent needs to look at. But I would say that there's probably people better equipped in your life than the new boyfriend to care for the child, whether it be using respite care at the parenting place or seeking out a drop-in daycare where you've got professionals who are trained and background checked to care for your child, versus leaving them with somebody who may not want to care for the child and is only doing so perhaps to appease you and just may not be equipped with the tools to take care of that child for you.
How do you ferret out a guy who or somebody who may have ulterior motives or more interested maybe in your child than in you? Are there any obvious signs?
Well, if they're on the sexual offender registry for sexual crimes, that would be the first thing I'd look at. Mm. Sometimes people's reputation precedes them. And oftentimes when somebody begins dating somebody, they know friends of friends. And I would say if people are saying, hey, this guy was a suspected of this in the past. He seems like a really nice guy. I hate to say anything bad, you know, but I heard he did this. You might want to know, you know, trust your friends, trust your gut instinct, watch the interaction with the child. If there's anything that makes you uncomfortable, address it. Your first obligation is to your child.
How difficult is it to check out the sexual offender registry? Do you have to go down to City Hall? And
no, you can get online and you can simply Google sexual offender registry, Montana, and you can type in a name. You can do that very discreetly. It's amazing what you can find, not only in, as far as people you know or somebody you might have concern with, but you can also check out your own neighborhood. You can check out the city of Missoula. There's quite a bit of information available on those websites.
Last question. Ms. Nygaard, let's say you are out shopping or you're just in the backyard gardening and you hear an adult getting a little out of control with their child.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get involved, can you? It's Montana. People need to just mind their own business. Yeah?
Exactly. And that's what we all think. It's uncomfortable. And I just wrote a little piece on this because I decided that I needed to see if I could test my own courage in this area. I did just what you were talking about. I intervened during a negative parenting moment, and I said a few things that were very positive, and it turned out great. She actually smiled and then showed a little more attention toward her child. You can walk up to somebody and say, you know, my child at this age was doing the exact same thing. I really empathize with you. Whatever it is, keep it positive because we don't want to escalate a parent. We want that parent to feel like, okay, I'm not the only one. Okay, I'm having a tough time and not everybody's judging me in a negative way.
Great advice. I've been speaking with Teresa Nygaard, the executive director of the Parenting Place in Missoula, and Missoula Police Detective Katie Peterson. You also serve as president, board of directors of...
Past president, board of directors for the Parenting
president.
Place.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both so much for coming
Thank
in.
You.
It was a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide, there's a winter weather advisory in effect from 6 this evening to noon tomorrow for the West Glacier region. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow. Lows should be in the mid-20s to lower 50s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and snow showers. High should be in the mid-40s to lower 50s. In central Montana, there's a winter storm warning in effect until 6 tomorrow night for elevations above 5,000 feet for the northern Rocky Mountain front. For the rest of central Montana, there's a winter weather advisory in effect until 6 tomorrow night. Tonight, rain and snow is likely with lows 20 to 25 to 30 degrees. Wind gusts should reach up to 50 miles per hour. Tomorrow, look for cloudy skies with a chance of snow in the morning. Then there's a chance of rain and snow in the afternoon with highs in the 30s. In southwest Montana, there's a winter weather advisory in effect until 6 tomorrow night for Madison, Broadwater, and Gallatin counties. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow. Lows should be 25 to 30 degrees, and wind gusts could reach up to 45 miles per hour. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow in the morning and a chance of rain and snow in the afternoon. Expect highs in the 40s. And now for the editorial comments of Pat Williams.
President Obama seriously rattled at least one cage with his recent reference to Russia as a, quote, regional power. Following the international meeting on national security in the Netherlands, the president, responding to a press conference question, said, quote, Russia is a regional power that is threatening some of its immediate neighbors not out of strength, but out of weakness, end quote. Our president is correct. Russia's authority is limited both economically and politically. Its vast military presence is obvious, but so are its economic and geopolitical weaknesses. This is not the old Soviet Union, nor can it ever be again. Far from the empire of Peter the Great or Catherine the First, today's Russia is a very large but very landlocked, poor country with a failed government and a leader apparently suffering from an inferiority complex. Obama describes Putin as having, quote, that kind of a slouch, like a bored kid in the back of a classroom, end quote. Of course, both Russia and its leadership are a force, one to be recognized and with which to be reckoned. But they no longer constitute an empire, and the world should cease considering them as such. That word, empire, now applies to only one nation, the United States. And of course, we reject it with certainty. It smacks of imperialism, with which we are entirely uncomfortable as Americans. Our destiny, as Americans see it, is to be a welcoming beacon of freedom. We have a resistance to foreign expansionism and excursions, especially now following the wastes of Iraq and Afghanistan. The United States has, certainly with some exceptions, tried to avoid unjustified interference in the affairs of other nations, although there has always been a minority of saber-rattling hawks among our citizenry, and we have often elected presidents who have been too quick on the trigger. Despite those excesses and given our people's angst toward the idea of imperialism, we are nonetheless an empire. It's now more than 50 years ago when President John Kennedy announced, "I am a Berliner." He was expressing the belief that Americans are citizens of the world, just as surely as were the ancient Romans. Ours is the benevolent voice of benign empire. Unlike either the Roman or British empires, ours encourages law above power. We are engaged not with international consumption, but rather with civil mission. Watchmen on the walls of freedom, President Kennedy called it. America accepts the obligation of a powerful and free people to assist others around the world with purity of purpose and without the constant calculation of self-interest. There are those occasions, perhaps too many, when the essential truth of America's place in the world becomes less shrouded and more understandable. Russia's violation of Crimea and President Obama's description of them as a regional power should be for us a teaching moment, which has clarified the international authorities of both Russia and the United States. President Obama noted just a week or so ago that we and the world have an interest in a strong and responsible Russia. But that long ago superpower must learn the lesson of this new century, and that is, in the beginning of this century, responsibility is gained, not by redrawing borders through intimidation or force, but rather by national generosity and civility and a willingness to reason together. Perhaps those elements, supported, of course, by military might, ever present, just over the horizon, are the essential pieces of what may well be the new Obama doctrine. This is Pat Williams. Thanks for listening.
Pat Williams is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.